This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
You actually have passage between borders, but smugglers convince them that that's not the case. They get exploited. They lose their money very quickly and become very quickly food insecure.
That was MIT researcher Sarah Williams, who says many West African migrants start out on a risky journey to Libya with plenty of food and cash, but are duped by smugglers. Details coming up. Also, Algerian firefighters are battling wildfires that have killed at least 34 people. And in Senegal, unexpected heavy rains have flooded outlying districts of the capital, Dakar. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Nigeria's main opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP, is calling for an investigation after security forces arrested two alleged Boko Haram militants for plotting to attack the party's presidential candidate, Atiku Abubakar. The arrests Sunday came amid continued court battles over the outcome of Nigeria's February presidential election. The PDP alleges the ruling All Progressive Congress, APC, won through election fraud, which it denies. Timothy Obiesu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
The opposition People's Democratic Party said Monday it believes attackers were plotting to kill the party's presidential candidate, Atiku Abubakar, in his home, slay innocent citizens, and cause chaos. The PDP also alleged that the arrests might be connected to the ruling party's recent warning to the judiciary. The ruling All Progressives Congress last week urged the judiciary to be careful with the ruling on the February election, saying a wrong decision could unleash anarchy in Nigeria. The PDP says the ruling party was trying to start violence as an excuse to impose emergency rule in Nigeria. On Sunday, Adamawa State Police operatives arrested two men inside Abubakar's residence. Police say the men admitted to being members of Islamist extremist group Boko Haram on a mission to bomb the place. The police have handed the suspects over to the military for more investigation. Frank Shuaibu is Atiku Abubakar's spokesperson. He says Abubakar is a target because the PDP has presented a strong case in court against the February election results.
We don't see it as a coincidence. We do not need the services of a clairvoyant to hazard a guess as to what is happening. We are sure that they are stuck. We are sure that they are frustrated by the trove of evidence we have before the courts. But the only thing they have on their plates right now is to see how they can attack the life of Atiku Abubakar.
The PDP and the Labour Party have been challenging the election that put the ruling party's Bola Tinubu in the president's office. The PDP accuses the APC of manipulating the election process to retain power and is calling for security reinforcements around Abubakar. But the ruling party dismissed the claims. The APC's National Publicity Secretary, Felix Morka, says the PDP is making baseless accusations.
Very unfortunate that the People's Democratic Party would trivialize something as serious as suspected terror attack to politicize an incident that is still at the very early stages of investigation. I think it just shows the depth to which the PDP has descended in its utter confusion and loss. I think that's just the height of, irresponsibility.
Abubakar has not commented on the alleged assassination attempt. The Presidential Election Petition Court, meanwhile, is expected to rule on the PDP's challenge to the election. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Nigeria's weak electric grid led many of its citizens to rely on gasoline-fueled generators for power. But the president's controversial removal of a costly fuel subsidy in May saw gasoline prices triple, spurring Nigerians to switch to generators fueled by cheaper and cleaner propane. Gibson Emeka reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
Rashid Ayodeji, a lawyer in Abuja, is one of more than 10,000 Nigerians who have switched to generator powered by liquefied petroleum gas. The switch to LPG, also known as propel, is in response to the cost of gasoline, which have tripled since authority ended fuel subsidy in May. Ayodeji says that powering his generator with cooking gas is less expensive.
I was skeptical at first. So I said, let me just give it a try because at least I'm someone that I'm not resistant to change. Even with my experience so far with this 1 week, my fuel expenses has been cut by 50% for now. And with the gas I see left, I'm very sure it's still cut up to 60%.
In 2013, Philip Obim started importing hybrid carburetor that convert gasoline generator to run on LPG. For years, demand was low. A decade later, however, his sales reached a new peak. He says that following the fuel subsidy removal, he sold more than 10,000 units in less than 3 weeks.
The product is selling like wildfire. That is because of the cost of petrol, which has moved from 190 or 180 to 550 or 540 per liter across Nigeria. You call them hybrid in the sense that they allow you to run other than petrol on cooking gas, LPG.
Obim says the switch is easier and simple to make.
Essentially, you have to pull out the existing carburetor from a generator and install the hybrid carburetor. Then you plug in a gas cylinder with a regulator, of course, and then you power up your generator. It's as simple as that.
Some people are concerned about the safety of using cooking gas in generator that were originally designed to work with gasoline. Obim says there has never been a single incident with the carburetor over the past decade.
We've not had a single case of explosion arising from someone using our hybrid carburetor to run generators.
However, Chus Edison, an Abuja-based electrical expert and generator repairman, recommend that people exercise caution during installation.
If you must go into it, you must apply, you must be very, very careful. Put so much measure in place. Make sure that your generator is in good condition, that it doesn't have to have a kind of leakages, or the plug head must be there. That is the most important one. You must keep your cylinder very far from the generator.
Authorities from Lagos State are also assessing the safety of the product. Gibson Emeka for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Thousands of Africans embark on a risky journey every year to Libya. Many never reach their destination. A new interactive web report on irregular migration and food security shows the perilous paths West African migrants take and why so many are willing to risk everything for an uncertain future. VOA's Carol Van Dam asked Sarah Williams, director of the Civic Data Design Lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, and creator of the report, what she found most surprising.
What was most surprising to me is that most of the migrants are middle or upper class, so they have some means, and that they instantly become vulnerable as they make their passage. What I mean by that is the kind of vulnerability in terms of not knowing about certain rules, like in ECOWAS countries, you actually have passage between borders, but smugglers convince them that that's not the case. They get exploited. They lose their money very quickly and become very quickly food insecure, even though they set out with some means for their passage. I thought that was particularly interesting compared to some of the work that I've been doing in Central American migration. While there are also extreme vulnerabilities along the route, there are also some more support for those Central American migrants that don't exist as much for West African migrants.
they obviously are looking for better economic opportunities, but they must be really desperate to take on such a dangerous journey. What are the primary motivating factors for migrants to take on this journey?
The primary motivation, right, is economics and just a lack of ability to, even if you are middle class, to raise your economic opportunities in the countries in which they come from. And so while they're taking on extreme risks, they're not at home seeing any way of getting out of their economic situation, right? But also other factors play a role, and violence, conflict, issues around climate change are also contributing factors. But economics is really at the heart of why many of these people leave.
When you were conducting this research, did you or anybody on your team actually talk to the migrants?
Yes, yes. So this study was done with IFPRI and the World Food Program. And IFPRI actually did the surveys and talked to 347 migrants.
Were they all from West Africa? And did they talk about any personal experiences about what happened with them and the smugglers?
They were all from West Africa. So this project was basically IFPRI and the World Food Program did a survey of West African migrants where they asked them a series of questions about why they migrate. So yes, they absolutely talked about their experience. So they were surveyed in Sabah and Tripoli in Libya.
You also, in your research, or in this very interesting map that you show, that they can either go through the Sahara Desert or they go by way of the Mediterranean Sea on their journey to try to reach Europe. Talk about some of those exact kind of dangers that the migrants face when they do either one of those routes.
Right. They largely take the Sahara Desert because it, let's say, feels a bit safer, but actually the risks are extreme. And I would say the biggest risk is that passage through the Sahara where it's extremely hot. There are no villages or food resources along the way. And migrants become extremely dependent on smugglers. So that part of the passage needs these guides. And there are a number of deaths from severe heat. But also, you know, sometimes the smugglers just leave them in the desert.
That's Sarah Williams, director of the Civic Data Design Lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. She was speaking to my colleague Carol Van Dam from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Williams testified before Congress in November 2021 on Central American migration, which prompted senators in early 2022 to ask the Biden administration to open more legal channels for immigration. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehayas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Algerian firefighters are battling wildfires that have killed at least 34 people across the tinder-dry north and destroyed homes, coastal resorts, and vast forest areas. Witnesses told the French news agency AFP that fires raged like a blowtorch. TV footage showed charred cars, burned-out shops, and smoldering fields and scrub land as thousands of residents were evacuated. The news service says severe fires raged through the mountain forests of the Kabylie region on the Mediterranean coast, fanned by hot winds amid blistering summer heat that peaked at 48 degrees Celsius yesterday. President Abdelmadjid Tebboune sent his condolences to the families of those killed, among them 10 soldiers trapped by flames at Beni Kassila in Bajaji province. A Civic Defense Information Officer told AFP that the Interior Ministry is expected to soon announce the total extinction of all fires. This, as the public prosecutor of Bajaya ordered an investigation into the causes of the fires and possible perpetrators. In Senegal, unexpectedly heavy rains have flooded outlying districts of the capital Dakar and forced the cancellation of regional train service. Some parts of the national highways also have been flooded. Earlier today, reporter Alpha Jallo was in Ker Massar, one of the hardest hit areas. He spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson about what he saw.
The flooding is quite extensive because yesterday the rain came in the afternoon and it was so heavy that both motorists were forced to stop their cars and then abandon their vehicles, and then they had to wade into the water to get into higher grounds. But then the most affected part is those areas that lies on the outskirts of Dakar. I would name Ker Massar, Yembal, and Kirimbay Fall, and of course Fass Mbau. They were completely overflowed.
You mentioned that the heavy rain began last night. Was that the main cause of the flooding? Has there been a period of very heavy rain?
Yes, it was. The rain came at a time when people were not expecting that. Normally Dakar, we always have such heavy downpour, in mid-August. So we have been getting, heavy rain, in the countryside. But Dakar, since the start of the rainy season, have never recorded, this kind of a rain. So it came at a time when most people were not preparing for a very bad situation like this. So that's the reason why some people, they were, caught, they were surprised that the rain came and it was so heavy. They couldn't do anything. So all they could do is just to watch to see their, homes, to see their places being washed away by gushing flood waters. But it was so serious that even the fast train, the rapid train transport, even the railway lines were suspended, and then the national highway was also, traffic was also suspended.
Is help getting to the victims of this flooding, the people whose homes have been destroyed, the people who are cut off and cannot get out to get help, is the government or other groups getting out to help them?
No, not at all. Until this morning, around 10 o'clock local time, when I visited, places like Ker Massar, which is, badly affected, there was no sign of, any government aid. All we know that, the mayor of those areas, they are trying to mobilize, some of the youth so that they will get, water pump so that they can try to flush out these, waters from homes. But just about a few minutes ago, I monitored the news that the government is, trying to, convene a, an emergency meeting this afternoon. And then the Ministry of the Interior will be heading a delegation this afternoon or in the evening to go and visit the places which are badly damaged.
That was journalist Alpha Jallo in Dakar. He was speaking with my colleague, Kate Pound Dawson. Alpha says there are reports a small child was swept away in the floodwaters, but so far there are no confirmed casualties. Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga says his party is collecting evidence of what he called police atrocities during protests last week against new taxes and the rising cost of living. During a news conference today, Odinga said such evidence would be submitted to the International Criminal Court, where the opposition coalition rights group claims has left 30 people dead over the past 3 weeks. Police have been accused of shooting at protesters using live bullets in areas where the opposition enjoys wild political support. There has been no immediate comment from the government. Odinga vowed that the protests will continue, though he did not say when. The opposition had called for protests tomorrow, but later urged its supporters to instead hold a peaceful vigil to remember those who have died. President William Ruto at first commended the police for doing a good job in quelling the protests, but later cautioned them against extrajudicial killings after a public outcry. A white X on a black background has replaced the famous blue bird logo for the desktop version of Twitter, but it has yet to appear on the mobile app. Twitter owner Elon Musk made a replacement official yesterday. The billionaire owner has long envisioned creating a super app that will offer a number of services from online banking to messaging via video. Jeffrey Blevins, a journalism and public affairs professor at the University of Cincinnati, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that rebranding the social media platform is not a bad idea for Musk.
His stewardship of Twitter has been anything but successful so far. He's alienated a lot of core users of Twitter. You know, for instance, you know, making people paying to be verified, for instance, that used to be a real status symbol, where now it's just a cheap gimmick that anyone can get, right? And you have all these parody accounts that are, you know, verified, if you will. So it has become, you know, kind of a joke, along with, you know, limiting, you know, the number of posts that you have by reinstating all of these accounts that had been booted off. So at this point, I feel like he's stopped digging the hole, right? Let's just, you know, get away from that. Let's create something new. And I think there's, you know, there's at the very least there's an opportunity, you know, to bounce back. It's Twitter is essentially destroyed at this point. So why not, you know, build something new and try to make it distinct than what it was before. It'll certainly, you know, change, you know, the narrative, but also has the opportunity to do something new.
This sounds to me like you're saying, we need to stop digging the hole, start over brand new, and just, he's trying to basically tell people to forget about Twitter, which is kind of hard, isn't it, when people are so wedded to Twitter. In other countries too, especially in Africa, there's a lot of Twitter followers and people who use that as their main communication.
Right. Exactly. And there are a lot of people who, you know, were loyalists, but really those people have been let down anyway. And I count myself in that group. You know, Twitter has been my bread and butter, not only personally and professionally. It's, you know, it's been the main social medium that I've used for professional networking, that kind of thing, but also in my research. You know, Twitter's API was great. You know, they would give, you know, academicians, you know, access to it. You could, you know, the application system to be able to access tweets. It was pretty efficient. And some of us have stuck around anyway because, you know, we've put so much time and effort into it. I mean, I think if you're someone who is upset with what he's done and you're still around, like I am, that says something. I'm going to stick around for X too.
What about this? It's going to be the everything app.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I think that's also somewhat of a response to Threads, in the sense that, you know, Zuckerberg had, you know, kind of a flex move with Threads, where it was very, you know, Twitter-like, you know, having, you know, Instagram, you know, which is very visual, Threads, which is, you know, more about short text messages, and then, you know, Facebook, which tends to be a little more personal, had kind of the, you know, the holy trinity, whereas, you know, Twitter, it was just so much more of its own thing. So trying to rebrand this as X and making it a, you know, a one-stop shop that's going to be, you know, everything, like I said earlier, it's not the worst idea I've heard.
That's Jeffrey Blevins, a professor of journalism and public affairs at the University of Cincinnati in the Midwestern United States. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam here in Washington. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Nicole Peters, and our engineer, Zainab Abdulrahman, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.